Welcome to the Soul Mama podcast, where we have deep and honest conversations about healing, awakening, spirituality, and wellness on this sacred journey of conscious motherhood. We ask how we can walk this path in a way that nourishes, elevates, and heals us and our children. We deserve space and time to slow down and tune in to our hearts, to heal ourselves, and to honor our highest callings. It starts with us. I'm Nahanda Truscott-Reed. I'm a mother, holistic wellness coach, writer, and speaker, and I am passionate about all of the ways we can raise our consciousness and come into more alignment and power as women and mothers, so we can heal the past and make more empowered choices for the future. Our stories and voices matter. It is my intention that these conversations inspire, motivate, and move you on your own Soul Mama journey. I'm so honored that you're here.
Hey, Mama. I hope you are well. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Soul Mama podcast. Last week, we spoke to Alexis Lee about sexuality and all of the things that come up when we go through that transition into motherhood. And this week, we're going deep on toxic productivity, and we are speaking to Tamu Thomas. Tamu Thomas is a transformational life coach, a former social worker. She specializes in helping women achieve work-life harmony by aligning with their nervous system for holistic well-being. Her book, which is coming out in March, published by Hay House, is called Women Who Work Too Much, Break Free from Toxic Productivity and Find Your Joy. It offers groundbreaking insights to help women liberate themselves from the systemic pressures that create an environment where we have to overwork, overfunction to survive, where we need to navigate workplace stress and the unequal burden of emotional and domestic responsibilities. And so from as long as I've known Tamu, she's had this gift of being able to call out and name the things that often we find hard to speak about. On her Instagram account, she's constantly bringing truth to power, just saying the things in a way that really help us to stop, listen, and take account for the changes that we want to make. And so the whole idea around toxic productivity, I think, really takes up another notch when we think about women of color specifically navigating motherhood, because there is this need to prove, there is this need to not become a stereotype, there is this need to almost over-deliver, which I think is ancestral, I think it's societal, and we go into all of these things. And so this conversation is a real juicy one where we start to unpack what does it mean to kind of walk through life carrying those burdens, and how can we actually put them down and let them go and reclaim our energy and move through life in a way that's going to be much more empowering from a nervous system level. And I think that's one thing that Tamu brings, is this wisdom and knowledge about somatics and our nervous system, so that we can actually do this from a really deeply embodied place, not just from a theory mind space. So I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Without further ado, here's Tamu. Welcome, Tamu, to the Soul Mama podcast. It is such a pleasure to have you here. How are you doing today?
I am very well. I'm very happy to be here with you. That's like lifted how well I am to not just well. I'm going to be exquisite. I'm exquisite now that I am here in your company.
I love that. So I wanted to give the listeners just a sense of how you and I have connected in the past. We've had the benefit of collaborating on works in the past, but also being at events where really deep things have unfolded. And so I feel like, even though, you know, things have been, I've been away for a while and off of Instagram for a while, I feel like the connection there is strong. I feel
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's been a pleasure to witness the growth and the consistency and the kind of expansion as you've changed your message and pivoted onto the work that you're doing now. So for those of us who might not know your work, could you just explain what you do in your own words?
I'm a coach for people who want to have a positive social impact. Previously, I was a life coach for women in business. One of my focuses was women approaching their mid-years because it's a profound period of awakening. And what I found as my journey progressed is that I had a real affinity for people whose work was centered around social justice. And what I noted is that a lot of people whose work is rooted in social justice, people who may be described as social impact entrepreneurs, have a tendency to run their businesses like a poorly funded charity. And I'm like, the work you're doing is so soulful. It comes from such a deep well. It comes from such passion, such a mission and vision that you are giving of yourself when you are doing this work. Social justice is a reciprocal relationship. If we're not being just to ourselves, we're not in right relationship with the justice we want to create in the world. So bottom line is, I want people to do purposeful, profitable work without dysregulating their nervous systems.
Woo, 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 woo. We started off on a banger. I was like, I was transformational life coach. No. We're going to go to the heart of the matter. And I love that. I love that because clearly there's been a journey in your own kind of witnessing of what people have been struggling with over the time that you've been a coach. So I can see that you've pivoted from the kind of focus on everyday joy. And that was kind of the mission. And then women in business and then leadership. And now there's this kind of thread with the patterns that you've been seeing that these women have been struggling with in the sense
and
of
me.
And yourself and yourself. Yeah. With this sense of how do you balance your passion, your drive, your moral values, your perspectives on the world and your lived experience with the fact that often, unfortunately, that is not well paid. And so therefore leaves us at a deficit in terms of our energy, which then compromises the way that we show up for the work that we're so passionate for. And I really feel that in my own journey as well. You know, I took a hiatus from Soul Mama because it was too much to juggle with the way that I wanted to show up in my motherhood. And for me, I was like, why do I have a brand that's talking about motherhood if it's compromising me showing up for the children that I have here right now because of the juggle of the necessity of having to show up in a particular way. And now coming back into it, I'm able to kind of see that and see where there's space for more balance and see where there's patterns and things that I've internalized in my own psyche around what it means to work and mother and show up in the best way for myself and for my family. When I learned that this was going to be your newest expression into the world, tell us the title, please.
My book is called Women Who Work Too Much, Break Free from Toxic Productivity and Find Your Joy. And it's out on the 5th of March.
Amazing. And congratulations. And I really want to hear about how that journey of writing and getting to that point has actually been for you personally. But when I learned that you were focusing in this way, it just felt like it was full circle because some of the work that we had spoken about when I originally came into one of your memberships was all about the misunderstanding people have about rest and the necessity for it and the need for it to be built into any kind of healthy, balanced lifestyle that you're living, whether or not you're trying to produce financial success or business success or just show up as a good mother in your home, right? It's like we need to have these reserves that we can come back to daily, not just when we're in crisis. And so to see that kind of message being carried on in this way, I was like, yes, Tabu, you've taken the baton and you're running with it. And it feels really good. And so speak to me a little bit about what toxic productivity is and what moved you to write this book in particular?
Well, toxic productivity in its simplest form is an obsessive, compulsive need to be productive all the time. So when we talk about, or when I talk about toxic productivity, people default to work. And that's where it shows up a lot. Because from the moment we entered the education system at the age of 4, we have been conditioned to be productive all day long. And been taught that if you're not productively using your time, if you're not growing constantly, if you're not doing constantly, then you're not a productive member of society. Your value is reduced if you're not giving your whole day away to a system. And it's preparing us for the world of work where we give ourselves away in exchange for money, which quite often doesn't meet our needs. And when it does, we're so hooked on the allure and the thrill and the seduction of being productive all the time, we don't have the space or capacity to enjoy the fruits of our labor. And it also shows up as that friend who you go to her house before you've put your drink down. She's packing up. She's clearing it away. She's loading the dishwasher. It's that thing where people are like, oh my gosh, this is really lazy. I don't deserve this. I haven't worked hard enough to be able to have this restful time. It's a need to prove yourself and your value through the actions you take in service of everybody and everything other than yourself. Creating a life where you schedule in naps, where you go for beauty walks, which are restful and connecting and grounding, and you just take in the beauty of the world. That's lazy, that's frivolous, that's self-indulgent, that's high maintenance. If you're going for a walk, you better be going for a walk, because you're going to get your best ideas whilst you go for your walk. You can record that walk. That walk can become some of your social media content. So you can tell people, when you take care of yourself, you will be able to be more productive. So it's just this pervasive need to keep going, 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 going to output. But the important thing is in service of other things and other people, so they can tell you you're good enough.
So it's that deep desire for validation and for a sense of feedback and love that what you're doing is enough and that you are enough and that you're worthy. And
it's codependency.
It's that codependency. There are so many women who I see, even in the things that we've, you know, decided to do for leisure. You know, we've gone on a play date with the kids, or we've gone abroad, and the inability, the physical inability to be present. And I don't know if this is what you're speaking to as well, but just the I can kind of see the cogs spinning in their brain and in their physiology of like, okay, cool, we've done the thing that we said we were coming to do. Now let's get the kids, pack them up, let's move them to the next thing. And I'm like, wait, the kids are having a moment. Can we just pause and let them do what with it? And it's like, on the one hand, what I'm hearing you describe, and maybe what some of the listeners can attest to, is that this is the messaging that we've been taught to believe is what creates success. Yeah. You know, if you look at the Michael Jordans and all of the kind of successful people and documentaries and books and, you know, sound bites that we get bombarded with on a daily through Instagram and social media, it's like grind. Like when he's sleeping, I'm working. You know, when he's working, I'm working. It's that level of like, this is what it takes to create an extraordinary life. Otherwise, what you get is the dregs of whatever's left for society. And we all know that that's not enough. So I feel like it's this internal belief system that we internalize, that if we allow ourselves the space to have restful periods in our day and we're not full foot to the throttle every single day, we don't get to benefit from the level of success that we deeply desire.
That is the outward projection. The internal is that this, like, don't get me wrong, I'm a very ambitious person.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, success is partnered with satisfaction. Success without satisfaction is not success. But we are taught that it's success at all costs. We are taught that satisfaction comes after success, which is why you see people who are from older generations work really hard and don't know what to do with themselves in retirement, because they never learn what actually satisfies them as an individual. But our thoughts around success and what we're taught makes us successful on a nervous system level sends us lots of signs of danger. So you've got to wake up. You've got to do this urgently. It's got to be done really quickly. You're only as good as your last thing. You've got to beat this other person. You've got to keep working. We've got deadlines to meet all the time. If I don't do this, I'm not going to have money. I'm going to lose my edge. My livelihood is going to be compromised. And also the people I associate with, the people I'm friends with, the people that form my tribe, my community, I will be rejected by them. We're constantly scanning the world for signs of safety or danger. Our skill of neuroception is in part what made us the most dominant species on this planet. So if you think about a deadline, I need to be motivated. Most of the time when we think about things like this, we are activating our sympathetic nervous system, which is fine. Our sympathetic nervous system serves a purpose. We're not just supposed to be all chill and parasympathetic and meditative. We actually need that get up and go. So we're constantly sending ourselves signs of danger that we need to fight So that's success. Yeah, I'm going to wake up at 5. You wake up 5, I'm going to wake up at 4. You make a million, I'm going to make 10. That is that fight energy.
Yeah.
Or it's flight. I'm running away from poverty. I'm running away from being a loser. I'm running away from being an outcast. And for some of us, we find that really overwhelming. So we go into freeze where we've got all of this activity we want to do, but it's frozen inside. So we have all of these ideas. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. I'm going to do the other. But it's costing us so much life force energy. We don't have the energy to follow through. Or there are those of us that just shut down. We can't do it. I'm going to pretend this isn't happening. I'm going to numb myself out. So we're being sent those signs all the time. All of that keeps us lifted out of our body. I liken it to us operating at the very top of our head.
Right.
Because if we slow down, if we are present, if we are feeling the sensations within our bodies, if we are tracking our emotions and being present with the source of those emotions, and if we are present with what is driving us, a lot of us feel like we're going to fall into some kind of abyss and never be able to get out.
Yeah.
So a lot of that behavior internally is driven by a fear of being present with the truth. Because when we face the truth, we are going to have to decide whether or not we're going to consciously choose to operate in cognitive dissonance and pretend that's okay, or we're going to have to face the fact that this isn't okay, it's not serving any of us, and we're going to need to make changes. And quite often, those changes mean you're going to have to advocate for yourself in a way you haven't before.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to have to back yourself in a way you haven't before. You're going to have boundaries, and you're going to have to say to people, I may have operated like that previously, but what I recognize is that it's not just at odds with my integrity and my values, it compromises my needs. It also means that we will have to face the fact that there are some relationships that can only exist as long as we abandon and compromise ourselves to be in service of that relationship. And we are actually going to have the guts to say, these are the boundaries I need to have in place for me in order for us to have a healthy relationship that is rooted in a level of vulnerability that enables us to be intimate. And lots of people find that very scary because we're taught that vulnerability is weakness. So all of that activity, we unconsciously do it because that's what we've been conditioned to do. That's what capitalism, white supremacy, and patriarchy, it separates us from our true selves.
Yeah.
So that we can leave ourselves in the corner and focus on extracting and commodifying ourselves so that we can look good, so that we can look nice, so that people don't think we're bad. And then, you know, as a Black woman, woman of color, somebody who is systemically and historically marginalized, there are additional layers and factors that impact us, which mean we operate like that even more for our survival.
Yeah. When I was hearing you speak about that, I was thinking about the generations before us, you know, specifically those of us who've come from immigrant parents, who've come from parents who've, you know, had to come and work and survive in a hostile environment, and the ways and patterns that would have been adapted, you know, physiologically to survive such hostility at that time. And so a lot of us, I think now, we kind of look at that generation and think, okay, you know, they've done the hard graft so that we can kind of gain the benefits and we can kind of access all of the success that they paved the way for, not realizing that we've actually inherited a lot of that way of being and way of responding with the world just through the ways that we were raised and the messaging that we had. And also on a DNA level, the lack of rest that they would have given to themselves will show up in your actual cellular DNA, right? There's scientific proof of that now. So I think there's a tension there between, you know, the acknowledgement that we perhaps don't have it as hard as our forefathers and mothers, but there is still this sense of fight, flight, freeze that we're experiencing on a day-by-day basis, which hasn't seemed to have lessened. In fact, it feels like it's actually increased because we actually have the language and we have the awareness. And so people are much more aware of these things in a way that previous generations didn't even have the space or time to even name. It was just like, we just got to keep it moving, right?
Yeah.
So speak to me a little bit about that relationship, the generational patterning, and how you see it changing for our generation versus that of our parents.
Well, it goes even deeper than our parents, immigrant parents, coming to a hostile environment. They came to this hostile environment because Europeans made our environment hostile. So if you think about the science of epigenetics, which is what you were speaking to, and it talks about the seven generations, my mother, my grandmother, my great-grandmother were born in colonial Sierra Leone. So they were born into colonialism. They were born into pervasive messages that they were secondary citizens in their own country, continent of origin. They were told that white people were coming to civilize them, to show them how to live properly, because everything they did before was savage, barbaric, null and void. And then the ethnic group my family are from, my mum recalls her grandparents talking about their like elders who were returned. So within my direct gene pool, I've also got enslaved Africans who were returned from the Americas to Sierra Leone, to Freetown. So within that epigenetic line, I've got people who, it wasn't just they felt unsafe to rest, they could die if they took the rest they needed. They could die if they stuck up for other people that looked like them. They could die if they didn't show like a godly sense of respect to the people that owned them. They could die if they were educated. So if we think about the seven generations, that's definitely kicking around in my DNA, which is why I'm just like, let's stop over glorifying mindset work, because mindset work comes from a very conscious place.
Mm-hmm.
This epigenetic thing is from a very subconscious place. We live in our biology first. Polyvagal theory teaches us that our story follows our state. Epigenetics, it's not that it changes your DNA, but it changes your DNA expression. So I liken it to like, you've got your DNA, and then all of this trauma, intergenerational stress, etc., sits on top of your DNA, weighing it down, preventing it from moving freely as it would if it didn't have this weight on it. Mindset work and all of that conscious stuff, that's not enough. Because, for example, and I've spoken to this in my book, me as a Black woman, there was an occasion in my workplace where we were supposed to have got a pay rise when we went from being student social workers to qualified social workers. And we didn't see that pay rise for however many months.
Right.
So as a group, we decided to meet with our service manager to ask when this pay would be reflected. Nobody was speaking up. So I spoke up because nobody else was and stated why we were meeting. I wasn't aggressive in the slightest. I was clear. I was assured. Maybe I was assertive. And the response from my manager was, there's a difference between being assertive and aggressive. Now, she was projecting her discomfort and shame onto me because she knew she had let the ball drop.
Right.
But this was in 2005. We didn't have the language about microaggressions, macroaggressions, and all of that. We didn't have any of that. Immediately, I was shoved back into my box. I felt that sense of shame and the angry Black woman stereotype and all of that. I was like, oh my gosh, she's going to think that I'm rude. I'm an angry Black woman. It's going to have an impact on the other Black people in the organization because we're a monolith. People just, the Black community, there's no such thing as the Black community. We're all individuals that make up a group of people. And after the meeting, other people were like, oh, she shouldn't have said that. You weren't aggressive. You were assertive. We're so grateful that you spoke up. And I was like, well, why didn't you say that in
back
that
me.
Room?
Yeah.
Back me. But the sense of fear I experienced was not commensurate to the situation I was in. That's epigenetics. We have a huge sense of very primal fear because of that coding in our DNA, and also because our the part of our brain that processes that, you know, our emotions, is still like that hunter-gatherer person where putting your neck out like that could have had you expelled from your tribe, or you could have been at risk from somebody else. And it means that it's not just mindset work, because mindset work is usually about, I'm going to think positive, I'm going to be grateful or whatever, and suppress our felt sense, our emotions. Whereas when we really want to do this work and we want to heal those intergenerational patterns and we want to start to loosen the weight that's sitting on our cells, on our DNA, we need to be present with that feeling. We need to feel that discomfort, which can have a very visceral feeling, and you can literally feel like you're going to die, but we need to be present with that. We need to locate that feeling. We need to feel that feeling so that we can reassure ourselves. I have conversations with myself. I'm like, Tammy, you're not going to die. This is what's happened. So I can put it into context so that I can feel the beginning of that sensation when I'm in a situation. So rather than going through, right, you're going into this situation, this is the sort of thing that happens. And I liken it to like when you're going out with a small child, you're carrying luggage because you make sure you've got a change of clothes, snacks, drinks, and you're all the prepared. Things you need. You're prepared. So it's not about suppressing. It's like, oh, okay, my Achilles is shame. So that's a place that I will default to. And I know that my shame feels like a very heavy, slow, gritty elevator traveling down my throat to the pit of my stomach. So as soon as I start to feel that gravity feeling, what is causing a sense of shame? What is causing fear? And is it proportionate to what you're experiencing? And then I can bring myself back into this present moment rather than spiraling down that fear. So right. I'm creating a new pattern. And the more I do that, the more I'm reinforcing new neural pathways, and the more I'm teaching my nervous system that it's safe.
And there's another way to respond. There's another way. There's another choice, because you're consciously carving that space out where otherwise you would have just been kind of chokehold in the response. And it would have just been like, this is the reaction, this is the default. But you're actually consciously noticing that earlier, giving yourself an alternative and allowing yourself to kind of gain a bigger perspective on the factual kind of situation. That makes a lot of sense. And I wanted to go back to what you were saying earlier about the seven generations and the epigenetics, because the way you described it is almost like the trauma sits on top of the cells. One way I've had another guest on here, Dr. Rosales Metzer, speak about it is like, because there was no space and no capacity for the previous generations to feel their feelings, because there was dire consequences if they did, we're almost feeling it more so, right? It's like there is a predisposition. So what I see, for example, in the higher rates of mental unwellness or anxiety or depression in Black and minority ethnic groups is that, I say minority ethnic, we're global majority, yeah, global majority groups, is that there's almost like a catching up to a reality that we might not even be connecting back to the history, but we're experiencing it in our bodies. So even though people are kind of putting all of their effort and energy into showing up and to kind of going through the motions in their work or in their lives, there is this catching up that's happening on an embodied level that is kind of leading them into a place that means that perhaps that predisposition is showing up now in this generation, which it can't always be explained away by something that's actually happening to you in your life. You know, like when people are like, I don't feel justified enough to even be feeling this depressed because nothing actually is happening that's that bad to me. We're feeling it more because there is space now to feel, whereas our previous generations didn't have that space. So it's almost like we're feeling their grief, their pain, their suffering on an embodied level without even having the, you know, microaggressions and whatever else happening in your day to day, which obviously have those then triggers. But it's like this generational catching up of the emotion, of honoring that reality. I wondered if you had any thoughts on that as a theory.
When I'm hearing that, it makes me think about the autonomic ladder. So our autonomic nervous system works in a predictable hierarchy. And in order for us and our lineage to survive, lots had to be suppressed in order for us to manage the dire situations and the danger we were in. So the autonomic nervous system if we start at the bottom of the autonomic nervous system, we have the parasympathetic nervous system. And in your survival state, the parasympathetic nervous system is about shutdown. It's that depressed state where you're numbing, you are taking yourself out of the world, you're hiding because it doesn't feel safe. That's the oldest part of our autonomic nervous system. That's from when we were like amoebas or something and we didn't have the capacity or the ability to run. So, you know, we this vessel we are in contains the wisdom of this entire earth. Then in the middle of the autonomic ladder, we have the sympathetic branch of the nervous system, which is all about activation. But in a survival state, it is about fight or flight. At the top of the ladder, we have the ventral part of the nervous system, which is about social engagement, connection, rest and digest, like when you're feeling good. When we're making our way to that connected, ventral, rest and digest, social engagement phase, we can't bypass the sympathetic activation. You have to go through that sympathetic activation to get to that ventral space. I liken it to instead of a ladder, I use a graphic of waves, because when we put it in a ladder and a hierarchy, people feel like ventral is the place to be. That's where we're supposed to be. No, as human beings, we're designed to go up and down that ladder in waves. Now, we are in a time of way more safety than our ancestors were. So there is a lot more space within our nervous system for things to pop up and us to process. We don't process in a shutdown place. We begin to process in that sympathetic activation. We have been taught over generations, it's dangerous for us to be angry, to advocate for ourselves. It's dangerous for us to be in partnership with that rage, even though we know that anger, rage, and all of that tells us something is wrong, something needs to change. So part of what we're experiencing is ancestral, is spiritual, and also a lot of it is biological. And because we live in a society that makes anger, rage, even justice wrong, it's like we've signed up to a social contract. So when we are going through and we're making contact with all the things we should rightfully be angry about, have like justified rage for, we feel like we're breaking the rules. We feel like we're doing something wrong. So we've got a cacophony of things taking place. If we can remember that regardless of whether it is ancestral or mental, if we can remember that we heal through the body, that the ancestral moves through us, through our bodies, that the mental moves through us, through our bodies, the spiritual moves through us, through our bodies. If we can remember that we heal through our bodies and we do the work to be present with those things and find safe community to be able to process with, we're not supposed to do this on our own. We're the most pro-social creatures on this planet. We're not designed for all of this hyper-individuality that is pumped through capitalism. If we can be in community together, we will heal a lot of that intergenerational and our own personal experiences. And that could simply be us being in community with other people who are sharing their experiences. We're not trying to fix them. We're not trying to do anything. We are witnessing them. We are saying, I see you. We are saying, your pain is valid. You are entitled to feel this rage. I'm going to sit by your side in this dank, dark place, and I'm going to hold your hand so that you know you're not experiencing this alone. That alone is incredibly healing. And when we view it that way, we are able to make contact with and have faith in post-traumatic growth. Because a lot of the narratives we have are centered around post-traumatic stress. But when we feel into that ancestral challenge, we're also feeling into ancestral support, ancestral care, ancestral grit, determination. We've got to, one of the things I'm careful of is making sure that we understand how much power we have within our bodies. And that power isn't that dominant power over subjugating coercive power. It's distribution of power. It's power with. It's matriarchal. It's about us sitting in circle together and sharing that power. And that supports the post-traumatic growth.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Ghana in 2022. I went to Cape Coast Castle. And I was listening to the tour guide. My brain was switched on. I was going to learn everything I needed to learn. I was going to make mental notes. It was going to become something. Nahanga, I wanted to vomit, excrete, faint, everything all at once. I couldn't stand. I went to the toilet. I didn't know what I wanted to do, what I wanted to do. I was so discombobulated. I felt so sick. I just had to sit. My mum and my daughter went and did the tour. My head felt like it felt so woozy.
Yeah.
And I had a very profound experience with all of our ancestors. And they said, Tammy, you're not thinking, you're not logicking your way through this one. We want you to have a taste of what we experienced because it is not your job to repeat and to endure. We've experienced this, so you don't have to. What are you learning from this? So it's so important for us as Black, Brown, the global majority, to remember that within that space, that stress, that pain, that trauma, and this isn't about bypassing, there is so much gold in there.
Yeah,
and we've got to do that shadow work, where we go into the shadow, we find that gold, we transmute it and bring it into the light to offer ourselves the care and support this world is not willing to give us. That is how we will be in partnership with our sovereignty. That is how we will be able to not just see, but experience the inherent value that is within us. It really gets on my nerves when people talk about you deserve. Deserve, just I just see a image of Oliver Twist when I hear people talking about deserving. Babes, you're entitled. And for the type of people I work with, the change makers, the people who have a social impact, we keep talking about when women make more money, they spend money in their community, they're able to do this, they're able to do that. All of that is wonderful, but I don't want us to constantly be in a situation where subconsciously we're justifying ourselves. We're going to do that naturally. It's the way that we're built. Also, if you want to make cute money so that you can buy the type of house you want to buy, make that cute money. If you want to make cute money so that you can shop in the vegan farmer's market that only gets local produce, you make that money. If you want to make that money because you want to educate your children at home and you want to buy in support because you're not very good at maths and you want to be able to support your children in a holistic way, you do that. The moment I realized why I need my money to be the way I need my money to be, I felt free to go out there and create that income, create that wealth for myself because I wasn't justifying it. I'm entitled and I don't have to justify that I'm going to make the world a better place. That is imprinted within my DNA. People that come from backgrounds like that, us, invariably, we are so conscious about what it is to suffer. We naturally want to do something about it. Nature will take care of that. Conscious mind will bring money so that I can buy cute trainers and roller skates. Thank you very much.
Woof. I can feel the force where it's like you're connecting all of these things and the importance of really reprogramming our mindsets around what we've been taught to believe and accept, but also kind of challenging the ways that we've been taught to overcome it. So, you know, not having to overthink our way out or having to overprove our way out, but actually finding ways to be with. And one of the things that I'm noticing, especially in the work that I do, I feel like motherhood becomes the gateway to a lot of these deeper embodied truths that perhaps people have got away with suppressing because they found the job and they found the position and they're working their way and they're making their money. And then either through trying to conceive and having struggles or through pregnancy or childbirth or postpartum or motherhood, there is this kind of breaking down of those external validations, which has become to be props for our identity. And you're with the very real reality, which is I am responsible for this next life. And actually, I'm still living in a society that I can see as unjust and perhaps unsafe. And therefore, I've got this extra burden of how do I protect myself, my sanity, my relationship, if I'm in a partnership, and my child from a world that has already put upon all of these things to me. And a lot of the ways that we internalize that is I have to go harder. I have to work more. I have to make more money. I have to sacrifice my rest and my sleep and my energy to really protect and provide in a way that now we have an opportunity to, that perhaps, you know, previously some women weren't able to. So I feel like there are all of these multifaceted, like, intersections of which we're conflicted in how we show up in the best way. It's like, okay, you said, you know, healing could look like being in community and being with another person where we're able to feel that grief. And I was thinking, unless you've paid top money to find a retreat where people are dedicated to that type of healing, it's not like that's just around the corner, you know, like what most women I know.
I'm going to push against because, so in my book, I have shared everything I've shared in terms of healing practices, etc. None of it you have to pay for. And there is an element of that. I'm not even going to go into that. There is an element of that. But Nahanda, also,
yes,
within my life, I have made a conscious, active decision to go out and seek those aligned relationships. I'm not joking with you. I messaged somebody and asked her to be my friend. I saw how she moved. We had been around each other enough. I messaged her. I said, would you be my friend? She said, oh my goodness, I wanted to be your friend, but I felt awkward about saying. There was somebody else that I was introduced to, and I thought, oh my goodness. And I said to her, I just want you to know you're my friend now. And she said, oh my goodness, I'd love to be your friend. And I have, these people are in different countries. So a lot of our communication is via WhatsApp, video call, or Zoom or something like that. But I am able to have expansive healing conversations with them. I'm able to say, I'm dropping in a voice note. I just need to process. I don't necessarily need a response.
Yeah.
But if anything comes up for you, please do share that with me. All I did was pay the vulnerability tax to be able to create that sort of intimacy.
But tell me, that is not easy. I love that.
Why is it so easy for us to pay big money, right? Why is it so easy?
I'm not saying that is easy. What I'm saying is that I know most of the women that I'm serving, they are feeling really isolated, especially in that kind of early phase of motherhood where everyone else is at work. Like there is no one coming to check for you. It's not like in the days where our parents had friends around and people would come and spend time. People are in their life, in their lane. And so, yes, it takes a conscious effort to kind of be able to look out and to cultivate that intentionally and be able to say, you know, that would be a really lovely person to spend some time with. I really appreciate that person's energy. But when you're in the thick of it, you just notice the absence of the village. It's like, where was this village? Where are the people who I thought were my friends, who I thought would actually come and show up and be here and actually spend time? It's like, unless you have the privilege of having friends who are going through each of those stages with you, to have the capacity to even advocate for that for yourself takes a journey to even get there.
It does. And we have to take 100% radical responsibility for ourselves, right? So if we're thinking, where's the village? Make the village. Because when you're in that mentality, you're putting yourself in victim consciousness.
Things are
happening to me, blah, 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 blah. When I had my child, fortunately for me, I had friends who had a child around the same time. So we rolled together. And also, the other thing we need to remember is that relationships aren't stagnant. And sometimes we have to tell ourselves the truth that our relationships either need to evolve or they're not spacious enough for our evolution. So we need to start seeking relationships that are spacious enough for our evolution. Because what we can do unconsciously is we can keep ourselves in relationships that are too small, because we're worried about how we will be perceived. So we don't create the spaciousness for us to have that relationship and take it for what it is and cultivate relationships where we'd be able to. When I started my business, none of my friends were in business. And I'm not somebody who is like, you need to support me. If I'm promoting something, you need to share it. If I'm selling something, you need to buy it.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not my customer, you're not my customer. Of course, I love your support. I love your care and all of that kind of stuff. But they don't have to. You're my friend. I can be passing and think, oh, I'm in your area. I can knock on your door. I can say I'm tired. You'll say, I'll just go lie down in bed. And when I wake up, you've made me a wicked soup. And we're laughing about something that happened when we went to Garage Nation in 1990, whatever. That's the context, right?
Yeah.
When we set up our friendship unconscious agreement, it wasn't that you were going to be my biz bestie. It wasn't going to be that you were going to be my biz champion. So when I set up my business, I was like, I need to find business friends who we can geek out about how we monitor our cash flow, what tech we're using, what's happening in the industry, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
So I deliberately went out and cultivated those relationships. So for people who are in the thick of it,
yeah,
my invitation to you is to slow down and think about, well, what need do I have that I am unwilling to meet for myself that I am projecting onto other people? If I stop projecting that onto other, let me just pause there. Okay. Let's let that one settle.
Yes. Can you repeat it? Repeat that.
What need do I have that I am unwilling to meet and am therefore projecting onto other people? When you're able to, and we project those needs, if it was a need that was like, I need friendship,
mm-hmm.
we would be able to handle that. But it's a need that says, I feel lonely. I need companionship. That feels really vulnerable.
Yeah.
But when we make contact with that, we can start to think, what kind of friendship would meet this need? What kind of friendship could I be vulnerable with? And that person won't try and say, you know, you're better than this. You can do this. You're strong. Blah, blah, blah. Somebody that will meet me where I am. Then you can start to define those qualities.
Yeah, yeah.
In the first instance, those are qualities that really you're asking of yourself, but it feels too vulnerable. And secondly, you can start to get clear about the friendship you want to call in. When I did that, I started to call in those kind of friendships. Some of it was we just had a natural affinity for each other. Then we met each other at an event and we were like, oh my goodness, let's exchange numbers so that we can WhatsApp. And sometimes it was me thinking, ah, you've got a lot of the qualities I've got on my list. I'm going to ask you to be my friend. Closed mouths don't get fed.
Yes.
If you're not prepared to take the risk of truly living, you're going to keep yourself stuck in existence. When we're talking about nervous system regulation and we're talking about connection and belonging, these things are hugely vulnerable. But vulnerability is like a muscle. The more you train it, the stronger it becomes. And it means that you're able to call in the relationships you want. It means that you're going to be able to look at your existing relationships for what they are. And the beauty of it is your nervous system starts to, I liken it to, it starts to change shape. So the people you were around that were used to your nervous system, let's say being in a collapsed, suppressed shape,
mm-hmm.
their nervous system is not going to recognize the movement of your nervous system with the more flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
They are either going to get triggered or inspired.
Mm.
That's their lookout. As long as you're not doing that righteous indignation, judgmental thing that we can sometimes accidentally do when we're growing and evolving, if you're just flexing as you are and that person can't roll with you, energetically, the relationship will sort itself out. Yeah. Whereas when people are inspired, then they can come in to the next level of relationship with you. So I just want to underline and say, we need to take 100% responsibility for what we want to experience. And I'm not talking about ignoring systemic injustice and all of that. But the things that we have control of, we need to do that. And a good resource is to go onto YouTube and type in conscious leadership group 100% responsibility, and they will break down what it means to take 100% responsibility. And I hope that when you watch that video, you will think it is a supreme honor for me to take 100% responsibility.
Yeah. So thank you for sharing that link. I'll make sure that there is a link to it in the show notes for anyone who wants to go and do that. And it sounds like you have needed to personally walk this journey for yourself, because you've been solo parenting your daughter for a long time. Mm-hmm. And that often comes with the expectation that you are going to need to do more, that perhaps you're going to be, it's more necessary to be in your masculine because you are also being provider and, you know, protector for your child. And what I've heard is that it kind of, it makes women who feel like their sole responsibility is being carried for their families, mm-hmm. that they are less able to be in that softness, less able to be in that femininity. And so I wonder how you've navigated that personally, having the charge of you know, bringing in the money and the security for your family, but still also advocating for your needs, your wellness, your balance, your peace. How have you personally navigated that?
Once I understood how the nervous system operates, it's like life rolled out the red carpet. So I wouldn't even necessarily talk about it in terms of being in your masculine or your feminine, because like we need the parasympathetic and the sympathetic branches of our nervous system, we need the masculine and the feminine. What I realize and what I think people often mean when they're talking about the masculine is being in that fight or flight energy. And yes. I was like bouncing between fight, flight, freeze. And I would yank myself out of freeze with fight. Like that was I'm going to motivate myself. I'm going to get going. Once I realized, so I don't talk about balance. I talk about harmony, because there are times when I talk about, like I say, life is nessun dorma. In Luciano Pavarotti's Nessun Dorma, you've got those beautiful dulcet tones. It rises, it flows, then you go back to those beautiful dulcets, and then you have that beautiful big crescendo at the end.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was just living in the crescendo, so it just sounded like a racket. And once I realized I was living in that crescendo and I needed, and my living in that crescendo was because of this notion of balance, which means mm-hmm. I've got to do everything everywhere all at once. When I realized, on my own. And you know what? Because of my DNA imprinting, I think I would have operated like that even. Like, I know that I made partnership hard when I was in partnership, because I never felt safe to be supported, to be
and
held.
And to receive that. Yes.
I hadn't seen that. I hadn't felt it. I hadn't experienced it. But once I realized that it's about harmony, that there are some times that work is going to require more, and that's okay. There are some times that parenting is going to require more, and that's okay. But my priority is always parenting. So if the work needs more, but there's something that really needs me within the parenting, the work is going to get put to the side.
Right.
I was able to organize my life in that way. And I was able to organize the self-care, the rest, and all of that kind of stuff to be able to support me. I remember January 2009, I was sitting crying in my boss's office because my daughter was in childcare for long hours. And I was saying, it's so unfair. I'm making her work full time. That's not her choice. And my boss said, you must tell me. And so we organized flexible hours so that I could take my daughter and whatnot, so she wasn't out of the house for such long hours. So it was a lesson about stating my needs, asking for help. And then I remember looking at my child and thinking, you're always getting the dregs of, like, I'm having to like really scrape up the energy for you. I don't want to scrape the energy for you. And I had that in my mind. And that's what made me decide that I was going to work for myself. And I remember saying to myself, by the time she's in secondary school, where she's going to need that emotional support, I want her to come home from school to me, etc. And I was able to do that sooner than when she went to secondary school. And then you were talking about how your children experience your energy, not energetics, whether how your children experience your physical energy. And I thought, oh my goodness, I'm role modeling pushing through tiredness, not acknowledging tiredness, making it about me being lazy, etc. That's what I'm role modeling to you. I don't want to role model that to you anymore. So I started to operate differently. And I saw the fruits of my labor. It was after lockdowns. So it was 2021. Somebody was inviting my daughter. She was invited to various sleepovers in the half-term holiday. And she had said yes. She was excited. And then she said, oh, Mum, I'm going to be really tired and I'm going to go back to school even more tired. I'm going to say no, I don't want to go to the sleepovers. So she, of her own volition, arranged with these people that she would go for play dates, but she wasn't going to go and do sleepovers because kids don't sleep when they go to sleepovers.
Exactly.
And I know for certain it's because she saw me having boundaries for myself and my energy and knowing that my energy isn't an infinite resource, that it needs to be replenished and all of that.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm feeling you on all of that. And I'm so glad that that post, I remember it. And I remember you saying, you know, I don't feel like my daughter experiences me as at my most energetic. And I think that's true for so many of us because we prioritize, you know, the outward facing work first. And then we come back to our families in the evenings when we're, you know, we're
finished.
Yeah. We're done. I've prioritized a lot of our quality time as a family and a lot of that energy to being upfront with my children. And it still is experienced by them. My daughter's 8 now, but she was saying to me the other day,
like, I can't believe she's 8.
Yeah. Yeah. 8 and 5. And she was saying to me, you know, I still feel like you work more than you play. And I was like, you know what? At this stage of life, that is true. And there is a reason for that. But it doesn't mean that I don't value the time that we have together and that I won't make more time available for us to spend that quality time together. But it was kind of, it was also acknowledgement to me where it's like, even I don't feel like I work as much as I want to work, you know, and that was still being experienced from her perspective as not enough. And so it's given me a lot of room for thought in terms of just like the framework and what we're teaching in terms of the amount of time that we give to work and energy that we give to work versus the results that we want to see in the world versus the change that we're trying to impact versus, you know, our own passion and vision for our lives. And so it's a big ask for women and mothers to be able to find that harmony around, okay, all of those pieces, how am I showing up in ways that serve all parts of myself, as well as my children, as well as my family?
Like, all of those pieces are never going to be served. There is nothing in nature that is completely served by anything. It just doesn't work like that. So I think that we have to reduce the expectations we have of ourselves. And sometimes, like, I'm saying all of this, but sometimes it's a damn mess. Sometimes it's chaos. And I'm like, do you know what? That's how it's got to be. Sometimes it's a case of, I was supposed to do this piece of work for clients, but I couldn't do it. That's how it's got to be. Sometimes it's my daughter wants me to do something. I can't do that. That's how it's got to be. Like, I think that we have to be really real and really compassionate and understanding that, do you know what, darling? In order for you to have the environment to play, mummy needs to do this work right now.
It's true.
Like, that's how it's got to be.
Yeah.
And I also want us to recognize that another reason why we're never going to have we're never going to have all of those things in place because that's just not how nature functions. But another thing we need to recognize is a lot of the things we need to have in place to support us are systemic and they don't exist within the system. We have been pumped with this narrative that women can have it all since the economic downturn in the 80s and they really needed more women to get into the workplace, but the infrastructure was not created to support us. So what
exactly
that really meant is we can do it all. I say that we say we're not going to do it all. I don't want to do it all. What are you like? What are you doing it all for? By these conscious decisions, by being risk aware rather than risk averse, I've taken some massive risks to be able to cultivate what I have. We're not going to be able to create the world for ourselves that we want to experience without taking risks. And when I took that risk, I trebled my income in 1 year, working half the time. And I don't sell that as come work with me because you're going to half the time and whatever, whatever. I just got really clear with myself. Work is to meet my needs. Work is part of my self-care. If I look at work as part of my self-care, how am I going to set this up? And that's what I did. Because it is supposed, we don't live to work. We don't live to work. We work to support how we want to live. And as people with businesses, we have the opportunity to create work that supports how we want to live. That's what I choose to do. And it means I ruffle feathers all the time. It means that I activate and trigger people. I know I do, especially within my network. And so be it. Because when I go lie down in that bed at night, I'm in peace. When I'm doing what I need to do, I'm in peace. And peace is very, very expensive. And I'm prepared to put the work in to pay for it.
Beautiful. I think that is such a powerful point to end on. It's like, let's just strive to call in and embody that peace and put boundaries around it and honor it for ourselves and then communicate really with the people that we need to be able to support us in the pursuit of that.
We don't need more self-improvement. We need systemic care, because when we are focused on the pursuit of self-improvement, I liken it to we've been walking in a really muddy field and our boots are covered in mud. We come in, we clean them up, we do all of that work, and then we go right back out again to that muddy field. We need better childcare provision. We need better maternal help. We need more communal support so that people have more of that village feel inside their community. Mm-hmm. We need access to better food. We need our children's educational environments to be more holistic. We need workplaces to give parents more flexibility so that they can parent the future generation of people who are ultimately going to be workers. We need a system that thinks about what human beings need to have the best possible chance of thriving so that we all benefit. Going to a retreat, doing your journaling, buying your productivity planner, going to your TRE class is not the panacea you think it is, because you're going to step out of that bubble and walk straight back into a world that has been designed to be very uncaring. There's nothing wrong with you. You've got everything you need inside you. You've read the books, you've done the courses, you've listened to the podcasts, you've been to the coaching programs, you've been to the retreats, you've been to the workshops, and still do that. That's wonderful. However, that is not the answer. It needs to be in tandem with a system that is caring for you as well.
And I guess that comes back to the understanding that a lot of those things where we don't have the responsibility to be able to change, but we can advocate for those things and we can create as much of that capacity in the intentional ways that we set up our immediate communities as possible, right? Yes, and we can choose exactly to relocate to places that feel kinder to our nervous systems while we're doing that, which is also part of the thing that I've started to realize. It's like certain places have a higher charge on productivity, whereas other places you can afford to be a little bit freer. So there is still agency within what you've described, because I don't want people mm-hmm. to get that sense of, well, that's exactly why we're suffering. That's none of those things are going to change anytime soon.
Listen, don't forget, there was a civil rights movement in America that made huge change. Why? Because people came together. The Bristol bus boycotts in the UK, that made significant change. Why? Because people came together. The fact that women have the right to vote in most Western European countries. Why? Because women came together. And we know that the suffragettes were problematic and they were racist and whatever else. But what we have to remember is that
change can happen.
To make systemic change, we need collective movement. We don't do it. It's not the hero's journey. Uh-huh. It's the community journey.
And so, Tammy, for people who've heard this and perhaps are wanting to connect with you, to follow your work and your journey and to hear more about the book when it comes out, where can we find you and where can we connect with you online?
The place that I show up most regularly is Instagram. So come and find me at tamu.thomas, TAMU.THOMAS on Instagram. And you'll find the links about what I'm up to on my Instagram. But what I would love, 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 love more than anything is if you feel moved, if you resonate, even if you feel activated by something I've shared today, is for you to pre-order my book. pre-orders are very essential, particularly for new authors. And I'm a new author. And for people who pre-order, they will get access to my Be Your Nervous System's Best Friend course and also a really lovely Be Your Nervous System's Best Friend guided meditation and body scan as a gesture of thanks for your faith and your trust in buying the
book.
How do
we pre-order?
Before it's available. Right, so I've got a website for my book, womenwhoworktoomuch.co. If you go there, it's got all the links. So wherever in the world you are, as long as the book is being published in your country, you'll be able to order the book from there. And I want to say, loads of my people have all sorts of feelings about Amazon, and I get it. I truly do. And this is where we live in the matrix, and sometimes we need to play in the matrix. If you could buy it from Amazon, that really helps in terms of bestseller charting, etc.
Yes, of course.
And I'm out here trying to make a bestseller for us. So if you could, but there are also other retailers that you can buy from. So yeah, come to my Instagram, my events, the work I do, everything, you'll find it there.
Beautiful. And it was such a pleasure reading your book. It's jam-packed with embodiment practices and small micro changes that you can make on a daily basis, which is what I really love. I'm sure people can get all of the goodness when they click on the links.
Yes.
But it was really just refreshing not to have this, like, you know, quick fix, like do this one thing and have much time and you will see a transformation. It's like, no, these are mindset shifts, body shifts, nervous system shifts that happen gradually, intentionally, repeatedly over time. And so if we can walk away with just that as a message, I feel like it will set us all in good stead. So thank you so much. There is one question that I haven't asked you that I do ask all of my guests. Mm-hmm. And that is, what is one gift that you would give to mothers who are listening to this and perhaps are in that place of nervous system dysregulation and are just like, I just need that piece that you're talking to. What's the one thing that they can walk away with today?
Your children don't need perfection. They need you as your true, authentic self.
I'm feeling that one.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. And we will definitely support this book to being the bestseller that it deserves to be. I think the more people who have this knowledge and this awareness and can start to internalize this journey and take responsibility, the radical responsibility that is necessary to move from being victims into that sovereignty and into that peace, I think the better. So
amen.
Thank you, Tamu.
Thank you so much. Thank you. Take care. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. That conversation with Tamu really made me think. I really feel that the toxic productivity mantras that we've just been bombarded with as women, specifically as women of color living in the West, raising our families here, is so deeply embedded in the history and the narratives that we have come from generationally. And so to really give ourselves permission to break free from that and to recognize that so much of what we carry, this inner voice, this inner drive to do more, to be more, to prove more, so much of that is not ours to own. So much of that comes from the societal conditioning. And those are the systems that really need to take responsibility to change. Yes, there are things that we can do. And Tamu speaks to that in her book, which I definitely recommend that you get a copy of when it comes out. There are links to all of the things that Tamu mentioned in the show notes too. So remember to go and check that out on www.soulmamajourney.com. But just really give ourselves that space to understand and disentangle what is other people's and what is our own. How do we want to show up? How can we show up in a way that's sustainable and powerful and gives us the energy that we need as we navigate this life moving forward? So thank you again. If you have any questions or if there was anything that came up for you and you'd love to chat and get some support, you can hit me up on Instagram, on DMs. My Instagram handle is @soulmamajourney. Again, links to everything in the show notes. I always love hearing from listeners what you've taken away, what you found challenging, what you're going to take away and go and do. So whatever it is, hit me up in the DMs, and I look forward to chatting to you again next week. Peace, blessings, stay healthy, stay blessed.
Thank you so much for listening to the Soul Mama podcast. You can head over to soulmamajourney.com for more resources and ways that I can support you on your journey. I'm most active on Instagram, so you can follow me at Soul Mama Coach. Also, get in touch with me via email at nahanda@soulmamajourney.com. I read and respond to every single message. It takes me ages, but I really love hearing from you. Please take a moment to rate it wherever you've listened. And if you feel like you've got some value from this, please share it with another mother. I appreciate you. Thank you.